T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
The pitch to Baez, a pop fly. This is going to end the game. The first baseman, Farmer, makes the catch. And Cincinnati holds on and beats the Cubs 8-6. Ron and I return. The Reds win the game. They win the series.
Middays on the Score.
The Reds aren't terrible, but it's still one of those teams you get used to the Cubs in their competitive window feasting on the Reds. Not as easy as it used to be. The Bernstein and McKnight Show, keeping you updated on all things NBA as this free agent bonanza continues. Hat tip there to Gary from Evanston and a Sky Point. I could do both. I could tip the hat.
Sure,
and
you
point
can.
To the sky, the
whole you're allowed to do
the,
that.
The bonanza reference. But it's just wild times in the NBA and some uncomfortable times for the Cubs. Great point made by Anthony Rizzo.
What's that?
I thought. Where Rizzo's like, look, we have Craig Kimbrell now. We've got to get ahead of teams.
Yeah.
You know, the whole point of building your bullpen from the back to the front is, you know, get on with it. Get on with it. What it does to a team psychologically to fall behind the Cubs, knowing that you've got this remodeled high-leverage bullpen. It doesn't matter if you can't get out there and you know, you don't want to shorten a game when you're losing it.
No, there's no doubt about it. And even, you know, John Lester gives up the 3-run shot to Eugenio Suarez to start the game.
Oof.
That ball was tagged.
My goodness.
And he's got some mild concerns about the strike zone, where it was and where it wasn't. But credit to Lester. He did the veteran thing of not wanting to, you know, moan too much about it after the game. 5 2/3 with 3 runs after giving up a massive shot like that, where hard contact looked a little scary early. That's actually a pretty good job of settling things back down when you're, you know, not having your best day. They've got to hit. They've got to hit. They've got to hit. They've got to hit. And I don't think, maybe I'll be wrong, and I'm fine with it if I am. It won't be the first time. I don't think that a big franchise-altering trade is on the way. I don't think that Kyle Schwarber is getting dealt for a couple of pieces that help you out, you know, on the peripheries of your offensive production. I don't think Ian Happ is going to get mixed into a big time trade for somebody young and controllable. I don't think that's on the way. I just don't think look at the trade market. I don't think those guys are out there the way that a lot of Cubs fans would like them to be. I think it's a lot more likely that your additions have been made and holding on and waiting for maybe a minor league promotion and maybe Ben Zobrist coming back in September or late August is the more likely way this offense gets itself sorted. So in the meantime, you got to ask for a lot more from a couple of big-time bats that have been struggling.
In their last 5 series on the road, how many do you think the Cubs have won?
In this season?
Yeah.
None of them.
Correct.
They've won none of their last 5 road series. That's
true.
They've this is their first losing month in 2 years, since 2017. I mean, this is a low watermark for 4 years of exceptional baseball. And really what has me more worried than anything else, because I do think the offense is good enough to float you through some difficult times, it's injuries to starting pitchers. I mean, Cole Hamels goes down. This is a... I don't know if this is the same type of... It is the same oblique that set him back for a long time 2 years ago, but it took him a while. He missed 2 months last time he injured an oblique and credited that with what dropped his velocity for the better part of the first half of last season when he was struggling with the Rangers. He tried to push and come back too soon. That affected his velocity. It affected his mechanics, which in turn affected his control. This is a guy who's at the top of your rotation.
This is why Pecota doesn't like old pitchers.
It's one reason, yeah. I mean, pitchers are always injured. You get older, and the only thing that's indicative of future injury is past injury. That much we know in baseball. That's the only thing we know. And dudes get hurt.
Yeah, my first thought, when he knew immediately, when Hamels recognized immediately,
shut it down
right now, my first thought was 6 to 8 weeks. when after that hearing oblique and knowing what happened with the Rangers, that was exactly what was running through my mind. And you, again, I'm the Golden State Worrier. That's that's what I do. The Windy City Worrier, call it what you want. But you know, Kyle Hendricks says he feels fine. He's going to come back. You know, I get nervous about shoulder stuff. But this dude is 35, and he's been through this before. And it, like you say, it was 2 months.
It was. It was, and he pushed it. It was 2 months, and he pushed it. So I don't know where your expectations are at. And now, I mean, for the health of this rotation, but they've got to be cautious, don't they? I mean, it's great that you've got Alzolay able to throw, but even that kid, as solid as he's looked,
he's still stretching out.
Has only thrown 87, 88 pitches at most in an outing this year, and you saw what it was for that guy to tire a little bit toward the back end of his start. That's okay. That's not a shot on Alzolay. That's just where his development's at after coming off of some pretty serious injuries last year for him. So now you've got what? Mike Montgomery perhaps sliding into the rotation. Oof. Tyler Chatwood probably sliding into a rotation spot here or there. I mean, just if you play this cautiously and you want to, because listen, the idea for the Cubs before Cole Hamels got hurt was to stretch this rotation out into six guys for this turn, the one right before the All-Star break, and probably the one after. I think that idea is still something you've got to trust because Q may need that. Hendricks may need that coming back. John Lester, as much as he says he doesn't want it, may need one or two of 6 days rest instead of the five days instead of four. Then you've got to keep doing that. That means that three of your bullpen guys, Alzolay, Chatwood, Montgomery, have to take four starts over the next month or so. Those are things you got to think about now.
And when we talk about attrition, interesting to bring that up, because when we talk about the team looking at the 162 and saying who's going to be fresh in August, who are these important players, it's amazing is here are Contreras and Baez, who are now both All-Star starters, who are pressed into duty in this exhibition game to represent the team and the league and everything else. But ideally, those were guys you would love. I would have no problem if either one of them says, you know what, I'm not feeling great. I can't play in this All-Star
game. You are captain sit out the All-Star game.
Yeah. Well, for a good team.
No, I totally get it.
Yeah, for a good those guys, those are your wear and tear guys, too. And those are guys who they know they've been trying to find spots to try to make sure that they're fresh. Those are incredibly important players who now are playing a game for no reason whatsoever. So that it does give me pause.
Well,
it does.
It makes sense that you're hearing Javi Baez tell guys like Gordon Whitmeyer that I don't know if this home run derby is going to be for me. I know I said I wanted to do it, and that $1 million prize is fun and everything, but he's got a bad heel. It's been bothering him some. And I don't think, given what I've read about it, I don't think the home run derby is something that affects players' swings necessarily. If you look at the overall production from players who have participated,
Been through that.
It doesn't really affect you all that much unless you're Bobby Abreu, and then that just sucks. But either way, I just don't want the extra effort to go onto a body that's been banged up and could use. I mean, listen, it's a bruised heel. The only thing that fixes that is time off the heel. And you don't get that when you're a starting shortstop for a team that needs every single inning from you in order to keep your one-game lead or stay tied with the Brewers the last month like they've done it.
Yeah, players think of the All-Star game and All-Star week in different ways, and I'm cool with that. If you want to have a go, have a go. But these games matter more, and they matter, period. And I just looked at the team's stated effort to keep them fresh, and now like extra baseball, extra travel, all stuff you don't necessarily need to do, and you're doing it here.
Yeah, a couple of texts in. This from the 312. Do you see Ian Happ as a guy that's able to be traded? I said earlier I don't expect him to be in a deal for a bat that reshapes the lineup, though I would not be surprised to see him moved for what that's worth. You know, whether that's still the left-handed shutdown guy that everybody has been speculating the Cubs would like to go grab and throw into the bullpen, or whether that's for, you know, I mean, if the prognosis for Cole Hamels comes back is something that is going to need 2 months to cool down and then get ramped up. I mean, you can do that math in your head. We just started July. That's today.
I'm budgeting for that. I just am.
You kind of have to.
And I don't think I'm being, you know, crazy injury worry guy by saying that this is what happened to him last time.
Mm-hmm.
He is older. He knows his body. And they're going to be unbelievably careful with their best pitcher.
So that means you may have to throw somebody else into a rotation. That means you may have to alter your sights as the trade deadline comes up, and maybe there's some rotation help there. But my God, Dan, you know how expensive it is to trade for a starting pitcher that can fit into a rotation that's on a playoff caliber team. Like, that's expensive. Matt Boyd and Zach Wheeler come with price tags that are probably a lot higher than Matt Boyd and Zach Wheeler ought to get, you know? That's just where the trade deadline, that's where the market's going to be. So for a team that's, you know, that's got a decent farm system but has exhausted some of the top guys and now needs Adbert Alzolay to pitch, your options have become slim here. Thank God you signed Craig Kimbrell when you did.
Right.
You can go back to that and just think about how that really kind of – it bulwarks a whole lot of things, and it is bulwark.
It is bulwark. I thought it was bulwark.
No,
when we had that argument, and you were right.
Wrong.
And I can't say bulwark because it sounds like W O R K instead of W A R K. But it's a great point, well taken from Anthony Rizzo. There's no reason to have Craig Kimbrell if you're not going to get a lead, if you're not going to put pressure on an opposing team because they know that that guy is looming and lurking. Both. He's both looking and lurming, too. All four things. Looming, lurking, then all of it. So,
looking lurm sounds like a Swedish import in 1910 that played a lot of shortstop for like the...
Or an IKEA desk. Right?
That you can't figure out how to put together.
You somehow can't install the looking lurm in the correct way once you get to your college dorm.
No, Rizzo's right. Walk twice and hit the three-run shot. You know, like just...
Or you hope the left fielder drops a ball and then you hit the three-run shot.
Okay.
Right?
Here's...
What?
He's gotten so much better. Kyle Schwarber has gotten so much better as an outfielder than I ever expected. But is it just me, or does it feel like every time he makes an error out there, it's always John Lester on the hill? And every time he makes an error with John Lester on the hill, it's just off the glove? Like he had the thing.
Yeah.
You've got to haul that puppy in.
Yeah, the 630 says, you guys are right, but the All-Star Game needs Baez, and Baez needs the All-Star Game. It's just a perfect fit. Why does he need the All-Star Game?
Because he's, I don't know, because he's fun and flashy, and that's what the All-Star Game deserves?
Yeah, but he's fun, I think he's proven he doesn't need it. The guy's a megastar without it, and you know it's a nice little recognition, but no, I don't think he needs it. And the 630 says, I'm sorry, but how is John Jay, Colome, and Nova not a perfect package for the Cubs? To do what?
I don't know.
Yeah, do you really need
Colome would be nice.
I mean, he's fine, but they got their closer. I don't know what John Jay does.
As for the White Sox, I'm thrilled that Dylan Cease is going to come up and start on Wednesday. It's great that his timeline works out for a spot in the rotation where you really need a warm body to throw. That's all well and good. But you look at the injuries that team went through over the last 5 days to the minor league depth, to all of that bullpen, and it becomes harder. And I've been telling you that the White Sox should trade Alex Colome and get back what they can for him, and it'd probably be a pretty decent haul. But the more and more you look at trying to assemble the White Sox trying to assemble a bullpen for next year without Colome, that's really difficult to do now with all of the injuries that you've had up and down your depth pieces, your bullpen guys. I don't know how you do it.
We've got an opportunity to win a fabulous golf adventure today. You have to be listening for your chance to win. It's a round of golf for two at the top-rated Bog Golf Club in Saukville, Wisconsin. It's one of Arnold Palmer's top five courses in the country. It is absolutely well worth it, and you're going to have the chance to play with a friend if you're listening at just the right time today when we give you the cue to call. It's busy with Twitter popping with all sorts of NBA news. We're still trying to digest the fact that they kind of spun the big free agent wheel, and we're looking at a brand new NBA. The Bulls may kind of be part of the conversation. We don't know exactly where. Are they on the back end of playoff possibilities when we start looking around the East and asking that question, like who's definitely better? better than the Bulls right now, and what can they be if they max out? Can they be a playoff team? Yeah, is that kind of the goal of everything that they're doing, to just be a playoff team? I guess it kind of is, but they've got new guys. They completed a sign-and-trade, or are about to complete a sign-and-trade. They've agreed on one for Thomas Satoransky of the Washington Wizards, so he's going to be your veteran point guard combo guard. I do like his game. And they also have a new power forward in 31-year-old Thaddeus Young. We're going to find out what we need to know about him from a guy that knows his most recent team. Pacers expert Scott Agnes is going to join the Bernstein and McKnight Show next on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
Oladipo kicks it out. Young, three, cut!
Back-to-back threes here by Thaddeus Young.
I don't know that it's going to be the back-to-back threes that will be the high expectation for Thaddeus Young, but he's certainly gotten better at that throughout his career and can do a little bit of that. Let's find out more about the second newest Chicago Bull, now that Thomas Satoransky has been added as well. Scott Agnes is on Twitter, at Scott Agnes, Pacers beat writer and Pacers podcaster, joins us on the Al Pamati Ford hotline. Al Pamati Ford, 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. What's happening, Scott? How are you?
Hey, good morning, guys. Just catching up with all of this news, right? More than $3 billion of contracts committed. That was an amazing night last night.
Just crazy. The fact, I want to say that on most of these lists of the top available free agents, like number 27 or wherever you put Seth Curry, like that's the last guy standing right now that's still unsigned.
Yeah, and of course the big one is Kawhi Leonard we're waiting on. That could tilt the scales in the Lakers' favor if he ends up headed that way.
So what do you see in Thaddeus Young? I know many had written up, and the Pacers themselves gave Thaddeus a pretty nice little salute on his way out as he signs with the Bulls. What does he do best? How do you figure he fits in, and how does he establish culture for the Bulls, who are asking him to do all three of those things?
So the running joke with me on Twitter is anytime I say his name, I begin it with glue guy, because that's exactly who he is. He's a culture setter. He's been a foundational piece for the Pacers franchise since he's been here. And I joked with Darnell Mayberry, our beat writer in Chicago, and I said the biggest winner last night was you, because he's going to be your go-to guy in the locker room. He would do every single interview. He's a true professional. Now, on the court, what you're getting is a now 13-year veteran as he enters another year here and gets that under his belt. He's a guy that's been through rebuilding projects before. He was in Philly, stop in Brooklyn. The Pacers were a playoff team already, but he had to be that leader. He's a co-captain of the franchise the last couple of years. And I think one of the biggest things that most people don't observe about his game is his off-ball help on the defensive end. Depending on who he's matched up against, oftentimes he might float around or quickly, you know, jolt over to save another guy's man, then quickly help back over to his man. And I think he's an underrated defender that was worthy of consideration even for all defensive team honors this past season.
I know the positions in the league have become fungible. We don't talk about pure 3, 4, and 5 with so many front court positions being interchangeable. But what is he most comfortable doing? What actual work responsibilities positionally does he fit?
Yeah, so he's your traditional power forward. Now, he will step out and can step out, and will attempt a 3 or 2 a game. But that's really not his game at all, being that stretch 4. And that's really what now more and more teams are looking for, right? And so what you'll see from him more so, working in the post, great finisher with his left hand, not so much with his right hand, but he's gotten better with that, I would say, over the years. But he just, more than anything also, he just does the dirty work, the hustle stats. He's going to dive after it on the board in the middle of December when no one's at that game. And he's also just a dependable guy. I think that's the other thing to me that stands out about his work ethic.
So after a player poll that y'all put out that had Jim Boylan listed as the coach NBA players would least like to play for, I thought maybe there could be an issue with the Bulls' search in free agency. Is Thaddeus Young a guy who's just immune to that kind of stuff, given his personality the way you describe it, or maybe are the results of that poll just a little overblown?
I would say it's a couple things. For one, Jim Boylan was top of mind, I think, when we were going around and asking players, right? That was maybe, I want to say, a month or two when we were conducting that poll into when he took over, and we still heard about all those various things that had gone on in Chicago, and, of course, the leadership council that gets a lot of publicity, and, you know, the fact that he, made players come in after a second night of a back-to-back in practice. And that's something I remember distinctly, being in the Pacers locker room and talking with some of the veterans, including Darren Collison, who was under consideration before he retired to go there. And we were discussing how that in the NBA today is such a big no-no. These guys obviously need to get their rest on a second night of the back-to-back, and it has become unheard of for that situation. Now, on Thad's point of view, in terms of just being there every single day, that's exactly who he is. He doesn't want to sit out games. In fact, he tried to negotiate his way onto the court in game 82 the last 2 years, but in turn allowed the coaching staff to do what they thought was best, and that was to rest him in the final game of the year, as the Pacers already had their playoff seed locked up. He's one that wants to go out, earn his contract, and play hard every day. And I think he's one, while he quietly speaks his mind and is a true leader in the locker room, I think he also goes off really trying to show the young guys how to do things, not just talk, but also show them. And he shows a lot with his actions, I would say.
How much time does he spend in the weight room? Because there's a lot of Bulls that could do well by having a 31-year-old team leader who is spending his time in there and showing them they need to be there too.
It's like you're teeing me up, because this is a little-known fact about Thad. During the season, he does not lift weights, he says. Right now, he's lifting probably 4 days a week, and he goes hard doing it. But during the season, he says, hey, I'm a vet. It just doesn't work for me. I don't lift weights.
Okay.
Well, we'll
see how that plays, because I know there are Bulls who would be better served to try to keep up a little bit of muscle mass during the season. So that's an interesting note. So you're saying he's not shy about speaking up during a huddle, though, that they're showing and setting an example is one thing, but is he somebody who's actually, as a play is going to be diagrammed, puts his finger on the board and said, you know what, let's set this screen at this angle, or let's make sure that you look for a backdoor turn here?
Yeah, but it's more so players coming out. Maybe your young gun, second guy into the league, comes out. He's going to put his arm around him, sit next to him on the bench, point out things while the game is going on. Yeah, he does a lot of subtle things like that that you'll notice on the bench, maybe before they huddle up as a group. Although I will say there was numerous times last year, Pacers had struggled in the third quarter often. There would be times when maybe they'd get behind double digits where Thad would take charge and explain the situation and how they got to figure it out. Whatever it is, they got to figure it out. He's not afraid of speaking up or speaking at all. But it's in a positive tone. It's in an encouraging tone. And he is so well respected by this locker room. He was one of 12 players voted for that leadership award, Teammate of the Year award. So there, I think for the Bulls, who are trying to rise their way back up, I think he is a great veteran leader that would be valued by any franchise.
Talking about the Pacers and Thaddeus Young with Scott Agnes. He covers the team. You can follow him on Twitter, @ScottAgnes. I want to ask you a little bit about Malcolm Brogdon being added to the Indiana roster. I wonder what the plan is overall for their backcourt there, and if you'd heard at all that Brogdon was on the Bulls' radar as he went to the Pacers. We'd heard some rumors about it. I wonder if you know whether or not the Pacers saw competition from the Bulls for Brogdon.
I had not heard anything concrete, but what I did hear about an hour before real free agency, hand quotes here, got started, probably about 5 p.m. Eastern time, I really hear in heavy interest that the Bucks were calling around, seeking out a possible sign-and-trade deal, and then what do you know, about an hour and a half later, they found one with the Pacers. So I was able to hear that. Now, in terms of the Pacers' backcourt, and with Brogdon. What they envision here, obviously Brogdon, a combo guard, but he'd play more at the point guard spot, eventually paired alongside with Victor Oladipo. But for now, Oladipo is expected to miss at least 1 month of the season, at the very least. He continues to rehab down in Miami from his quad injury. And I think that's where then Jeremy Lamb, who they also agreed to a 3-year deal with yesterday, that's where he can really step up and fill that void in the meantime. Lamb was a starter for much of the year in Charlotte, but then became really a sixth man type of guy. So I think for the Pacers, I think that sets up very nicely in their backcourt, and they got much younger. Thad Young's a guy in his 30s. Bojan Bogdanović, who they lost, is in their 30s. Collison was in his 30s. Now Oladipo's the old hat, as guys are all 27 and under with that starting group.
Why did Collison retire?
Very good question. I'm going to take him at his word, right? Of that faith and family. And I knew those things were very important to him. I guess I'm not sure anybody here realized it was that much of an importance to him. He's a guy that clearly could probably be making $12 million per year at least. We saw his teammate previously, Corey Joseph, just get that on average with the Sacramento Kings. I know he had bigger things in store. He was always thinking about what's next. A couple of years ago when he turned 30, he had a deep interpersonal time when he was really thinking about, A, how to be a better player and maximize his abilities at that age, but also thinking ahead to what's next. Kind of leaned on Steve Nash for a couple of phone calls, who he shares an agent with. But this was a stunner. I was texting right around with the Pacers front office. What was that, about 11 p.m. on Friday night? Mm-hmm. They were stunned by that because we all know he had suitors. And I thought, honestly, what made the most sense was for him to stay home in L.A. and play for the Lakers, get a nice contract, and not have the demands of having to do so much as a starting point guard necessarily. But it was a stunner.
Well, because the narrative kind of writes itself here, where you could see this as the Bulls had interest and he decided he didn't want to play basketball as an alternate option to actually playing basketball for the Bulls. They would rather not play.
No.
And I don't know if that's true or not. And frankly, the fact that that would spur the Bulls to go get Thomas Satoransky might end up being a good thing for them anyway.
That would be a cynical way to look at it, because I'm not sure anyone would turn down $12 million just because of a poor fit either. If that was something similar, right, to what he would be worth. He was relatively healthy, I will say, for being 31. He felt maybe the best he had in quite a while, because he had been dealing with knee issues over the last 2 or 3 years that required minor operations. But, no, I don't believe it as a situation where, say, a lack of offers. That was not the issue. The issue was he wanted to move forward with something else and for now at least put basketball behind him.
Scott, appreciate it. Thanks for the info. We'll talk again soon.
Very good. One thing I want to tip off to you and your listeners. Follow Thad Young's wife on Twitter, Mrs. Young, Shekinah Young. She's a fascinating and hilarious follow. And their two sons are adorable. You'll see them out before almost every single day.
Well, all right then.
Okay.
Scott, thanks for the tip.
Thanks for the tip. We appreciate that too. Okay, the Bulls have done something more.
Young.
Are you going to look that up?
Yeah, I'll look that up.
Get the Twitter handle for us.
Yeah.
The bottom of the hour is brought to you by Northwestern Football. Join Coach Fitz and the 17th-ranked Cats this fall at Ryan Field. Matchups include Ohio State, Michigan State, and Iowa. Single-game tickets on sale now at nusports.com. Been busy today because everything popping across the NBA. Still waiting for the Kawhi Leonard decision. Everybody else pretty much gobbled up. I mean, that's really it. That's all that we're doing, is just waiting for him to have his presentations and to be wooed, and then we'll find out. He'll be wooed, and then he'll be woged. That's how that goes, because we have looming and lurking.
That's
and
right.
We have lurming and luking.
Lurming and
luking. You are wooed, and then you are woged, and that would complete the free agency.
I think that's the procedure. Yeah, I think
here.
That was the weekend that we watched.
And this segment is brought to you by ABC Plumbing, Sewer, Heating, Cooling, and Electric. We discussed the Cubs and their malaise at the moment. I think both of us are in agreement that the Cole Hamels thing looks like it's going to be a while, because it has happened before to him, and it's a while. I'm guessing 6 to 8 weeks, but again, I'm not reporting that. I'm just guessing that, because that's what it was last time. And Dylan Cease, the once prized Cubs prospect, now a White Sox prized prospect, is going to make his Major League debut.
Yeah, he's starting
Wednesday
the
night.
First game of the doubleheader on Wednesday, and Ricky Renteria was, to the surprise of some, when it was announced that he was going to start, was asked whether he was going to stay in the rotation. And yeah, that is the plan. How many innings the White Sox have planned for young Dylan Cease is probably still a little in the air. But I, for one, am much, much more enthused to watch him pitch every 5 days than three of the guys they've had to run out there.
A lot to come in the midday midway. I've got a sports story that is the Metsiest Mets that ever Metsed.
Okay.
It has to be. I mean, you're... When I say you're not going to believe it, it's a lie. Because it's the Mets.
It's the Mets.
You must believe it. I also have what I think may be my life's calling, but I don't have the guts to do it.
Okay, well, we're going to LOL a lot then during the midday midway, because I've got an anniversary to celebrate and a documentary coming up that you will be interested to watch. The midday midway is on the way. Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
The first half or the second half, you know, it's they're two equal times.
Now, midway.
The midday midway.
One, two.
Midway, the most important of the year.
Three, four.
The most exciting thing on the midway.
Five, six, seven, eight.
Our objective is midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel it.
The midday midway with Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
Well, what haven't we talked about so far? This has been NBA, Sox, Cubs, All-Star Game. Looking at those Cubs that should be resting, who are going to be playing in the All-Star Game. Grumble, grumble, get off my lawn and all that. We're speculating about the Cole Hamels injury.
No, we're worrying and gnashing our teeth and rending our garments.
And also trying to exist in a world where the Bulls have made some reasonably good moves. To what end, we don't really know, because I'm not sure what they're trying to accomplish, but if they're just trying to not be bad and be reasonably competitive and good, it's not okay that they're not competing for a championship. But if this is all they can do, and they say it's all they can do, and they tell us what they're doing in that weird context, the acquisition of Thomas Satoransky for trade asset value,
nine
protection,
I don't know.
I guess that and the Thaddeus Young signing makes sense.
And so we got a new product alert. We've actually imbibed some of this. Do you imbibe this? I think you'd probably just mow it down. Toll House has come out with a new snack / dessert for you. You've seen some stores pop up with this kind of thing. It is a raw cookie dough that is, they say, safe to eat. It's made without raw flour or without raw eggs and without raw eggs. So it is a cookie dough.
Well, they already make that.
They do make it. Yeah, there are places. There are a couple places here in Chicago, like gourmet spots that just do raw cookie dough. I think you can get it at Cubs games and everything, too.
The United Center dessert cart has it.
They absolutely do. But now Toll House, this is big business now. Now the big checks are in.
Oh, now it's official.
Yeah, and they've invested and they're out here on this. For me, if you're going to go raw cookie dough, just go raw cookie dough. Like, we've lived with that risk.
Well, it's probably better not to die.
I mean,
you know
what? Probably.
Come on.
I'll risk it. I bought some last night. I got the Ben & Jerry's cookie dough, frozen cookie dough in a bag. They're little morsels. You eat them like chocolate chips or whatever.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Oh, they're just like little bite-sized things?
It's the exact same size that goes into their ice cream.
The chances of getting sick from a raw egg are so infinitesimal that it really doesn't. It doesn't.
I'm willing to roll those dice. I'm not advocating that other people do that. I'm just saying, I've eaten a lot of raw cookie dough over the years, and everything's turned out pretty okay. Other than, you know, the weird tick that I have and my inability to turn left out of doors. Like, I don't think that's the cookie dough, though.
Right, we can't. That's
I like, don't think that's the cookie
not
dough.
Necessarily causal. I think I've found my life's calling, and the question is, am I ready to do something about it? And thanks to everybody who sent this along, this particular story from the New York Times. There's something new, and it's called a super nest. And you think, it's going to be a super bird living in it. No, it's wasps and yellow jackets, and this is a new phenomenon. A guy named James Barron went into his smokehouse in southern Alabama, and I assume he means like a literal smokehouse that he has in which he smokes things.
I would guess.
And he went in to grab an axe, but he was alarmed to see a giant wasp nest 7 feet wide.
Whoa.
Extending along the wall. He hangs axes inside his smokehouse. Yeah, this is like something right out of Alien. It's like down in the reactor site.
Oh, yeah.
7 feet wide. It had been 2 months since he'd been in there. He said, you don't think about looking at the roof. It just now showed up, and it's gigantic. He retreated. He later sprayed hornet killer on the nest with his son. He said, that just angered the Yellow Jackets.
They laughed.
And he was stung 11 times. There's another, an entomologist named Charles Ray, who works for the Alabama Cooperative Extension System, or ACES. He drove to Mr. Barron's home. He confirmed the colony was a super nest, one that survives into a second year. They guess how many wasps do you think lived in that?
7 feet across? I mean, it's got to be, across his chest. It's got to be in the hundreds, thousands, right?
15 to 18,000 wasps.
Oh, okay, all right. These are the big wasps.
The super nest was one of four in Alabama confirmed this year. There's usually one or two. In 2006, he said he recorded 90. He expects to approach that number this year, so close to a record number of super nests. And he'd been surprised when the first report of a Yellow Jacket super nest had surfaced in May, and there's been a news release. Warm winters contribute to these nests. Most Yellow Jackets don't survive the cold. They freeze to death or have trouble finding food. They need a fair amount of sugar and carbs. The queens are the only ones who have an antifreeze compound in their blood. So a surviving queen will have to start a colony from scratch in the spring. And with the climate warming, there might be multiple surviving queens producing more than 20,000 eggs each. And Yellow Jackets are responsible for almost all the stinging deaths in the United States. Unlike honeybees, they can sting repeatedly and attack in large numbers. So this is yet another aspect of our warming world, the possibility of super nests. Now, my favorite thing in the world is destroying wasp and hornet nests. Yellow Jackets, the bald-faced hornets, paper wasps.
Mm-hmm.
This is too much for me. This is too dangerous.
Are you sure? Yeah, I thought you'd dig this.
I've seen the drone video. Like, I think get drone guy on this one. The guy that uses the blades of the drones to clean out some of these with a GoPro camera on there.
See, I thought this was going to be the start of your superhero origin story. Lame as it might be, but like, man reads story on radio and
Dan,
is now inspired.
Yeah, Dan, we all
inspired.
Think you really should give this a whirl.
And then I get stung enough that I get the actual, well, there's already wasp, right? That's already Evangeline Lilly is already wasp.
Yeah, that's true. But her power's altered a little bit over the years.
But you were an English major, so you could be paper wasp.
Oh!
Yeah, that gets a zackle. The 30 for 30, the newest 30 for 30, is on the way. It airs tomorrow. Have you heard what it's about?
No.
It's connected to a July 4th tradition. It is the story of Kobayashi versus Chestnut. It delves into the rivalry that is Kobayashi versus Chestnut in the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest. It is titled The Good, the Bad, the Hungry. It debuts tomorrow night, just a couple of days, 2 days before the July 4th International Hot Dog Eating Contest. Did you happen to watch any of the Sunday night game last night? The Sunday night baseball game? It was Mets Braves. I was watching and Chestnut was on the broadcast. This man thinks he can eat 75 hot dogs in 10 minutes on July 4th.
I ate four last night, and I was full.
Not in 10 minutes.
Four jumbo Vienna beef hot dogs.
Oh, you got into
grilled
the
onions.
Steaks.
Ooh, that's
boxed
the good stuff.
No, these are Viennas. Because they were on sale. They're $4.99, and I just sort of did my thing. And
the Vienna beef jumbo dog is the best out there.
Agreed. Agreed. The best, the snap, the amount of garlic, it's perfect.
I've got my plans for the 4th then. And watching this documentary, maybe eventually, on July 2nd.
I love you, Mets. I absolutely love you. I don't know what we would do without you. Not only did we get the Mike Francesa rant when they gave up or whatever, the 3-run home run.
Yeah.
And he's going off on the fact that they get swept in that series. But he talked about the 69 Mets and how they should play because they're celebrating. To give their fans something, some sense of positivity, they're going to remember that 69 team. So they brought out the surviving members of the 69 Mets just to kind of help the older parts of their fandom feel better about themselves. So they had the folks there. And it's a 50th anniversary, so they had the in memoriam slideshow for the team members that passed away. And I believe that Tom Seaver wasn't there also because apparently his family has disclosed that he's now dealing with dementia.
He's not well. Yeah.
Well, it featured in the slideshow. Among them were Jim Gosger and Jesse Hudson. And that's surprising because they're alive.
Both of them.
Not one.
Oh, my God.
But on back-to-back slides, they celebrated posthumously. They recognized posthumously Jim Gosger and Jesse Hudson, and neither one is dead. And Gosger's on Facebook and was having fun with it on Facebook by thanking the Mets for bringing him back and putting him on the big board. Well, look at me. I made the big board. Thank you, New York Mets, for bringing me back. So here's it. It gets even better because the Mets, realizing what they did, they put on the scoreboard at Citi Field, there was an error made in yesterday's We Remember segment during our 1969 anniversary ceremony, in which we included the names and images of Jim Gosger and Jesse Hudson. We are sorry and deeply regret this error. We've spoken with both former players to express our sincerest apologies. We want to thank Jim and Jesse, along with their families and friends, for their gracefulness and understanding. First of all, it's grace. The noun is grace, not gracefulness. It's simply grace. The grace and understanding. And they misspelled Jesse. They added an I. It's just J-E-S-S-E, and they added an I at the end. Not once, but twice. Never stop being the Mets, Mets.
They will not stop. As many know, it is an anniversary of sorts today. July 1st, every year, until the end of time, the Mets owe Bobby Bonilla a little over $1 million. But did you know that it might have actually worked out just fine for the Mets? Put it to you this way. If the Mets don't give Bobby Bonilla the buyout that they did going into the 2000 season, they don't get Mike Hampton. Mike Hampton helped them win the NLCS. They got to the World Series by freeing up the salary that they dropped when they said goodbye to Bobby Bonilla. Furthermore, Hampton then went on to sign a massive contract with the Colorado Rockies. This was back in the day when if you let a free agent go, even if you traded for him, you got a compensatory draft pick. Any idea who that compensatory draft pick was for the Mets?
No.
David Wright. Now, yes, that did end poorly, but that's only because the Mets are cursed by a witch, and they're unable to win anything for the rest of time. But David Wright's a pretty good money, a pretty good sign for that thing. Now, if you want to look at the money, look at it this way. If Bobby Bonilla had accepted the $5.9 million in 2000...
Oh, that's a win for the team.
And
if you look at dollar cost averaging and all that...
If you invest the entire amount, but Bonilla did at 8% interest, the original investment would have grown to $104 million by 2035 when the payments are done. Instead, he takes his annual payout and gets $95 million, so he's losing 10. Importantly to the Mets, if they invested the 5.9 at an 8% interest in 2000, that money would have grown to more than 14 before they had to make a single payment, and that money would continue to draw interest even when they're making
payments. Why do you think prize winnings are often structured in the form of an annuity? Like, I was looking at it this year.
It's my money, and I want it now.
I was looking at the Jewel Monopoly grand prize of $1 million.
Yeah.
And it was $30,000 over 33 years or something like that.
I mean, that's meaningful money, but you're getting shortchanged.
If you start looking at what the value is, the actual value of what of how they just they bleed out the value of that money so it is not it ends up being worthless. I won $1 million. Yeah, not really. Not, and that's even before you start talking about taxes and you're like, I was happy to win the $5 that I won and was all excited about it. My free sour cream and free hot dog buns and, you know, free organic wheat crackers that I'll never eat. But even that $1 million grand prize is certainly far from life changing.
I'd still take it. Yeah. That is the Midday Midway. We do it every day here on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. We're going to get back into the NBA because as we've been goofing around, even more stuff's going on. We're finding out a little bit more about the Bulls' addition of Thomas Satoransky, the guy who's going to fill in and play point guard, it seems. So we figured we'd talk to Mark Shinosky at NBC Sports Chicago. He is the Bulls' pre- and post-game host, and that man knows his NBA. Shinosky's up next on Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.